This is CliffCentral.com.
Richard, are we on track with the financial pack for my presentation to the board next week?
Well, hopefully. The team's very short-staffed, and it's taking such a long time to find a suitable financial manager for the division. We're way behind on all our forecasts and reporting.
Why don't you speak to the finance team? They're a consultancy that can help you with an experienced interim financial manager. You can have somebody to help you almost immediately. They'll hit the ground running with no long-term contracts and no upfront placement fees.
Go to thefinancesteam.co.za.
Welcome to the business section of our business masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Leandi Streeter, a business coach and guide from Race Corp. Staying on from the previous section as well, Cynthia, thank you very much for joining us. Cynthia.
You're welcome.
Our guest today is Mark Turpin. Mark is an organizational development consultant, coach, and lecturer with over 30 years of management experience around the world. He's worked with a wide range of companies and NGOs in the public and private sector space, including, amongst others, Barclays, KLM, Air France, Vodacom, and Oxfam.
So, Mark, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
So, Mark, the question, ethical leadership. I'm sure you've run into this question time and time again. And what is actually the world of ethical leadership like out there? I mean, you've obviously got many, many years of experience and exposure. How are you seeing that, let me call it that landscape? Give us a picture of what you're seeing as an independent consultant out there.
Thank you. Yes, it's a really important question. And it's interesting how we always put ethics and leadership together in the same phrase, because they are very much intertwined and need to be. When I think about how we nurture and grow leaders, and particularly the question of how we teach leadership in business schools and in society, we very much think of leadership as a neutral concept. Yeah. And we think leadership is simply associated with rising to a certain position and having influence over people. Yeah. And we don't really go into much more detail than that. Mm-hmm. My feeling very much is that ethical leadership and leadership generally should be about making choices. And it's not simply a neutral concept in that sense, that there are choices that leadership or leaders really have to make. And I distinguish between leaders who like to lead by inspiring or commanding a kind of blind obedience or loyalty amongst the people who follow them, a kind of obedience and loyalty that is often underpinned by fear, on the one hand. And on the other hand, I like to encourage people to think about leadership that builds commitment and is based on a kind of trusting relationship that the leader has in the people who follow and the followers have in the leader as well. And this choice, I think, that people have to make in terms of what kind of leader they aspire to be was made very stark for me recently when I was watching Donald Trump talking about his, before he fired Comey as the Attorney General, I think it was, he said, I needed, and I asked him, or Comey actually said, that the president had asked him for his loyalty. And I think underpinning that idea of loyalty was what I'm talking about in terms of a kind of blind obedience based on fear both ways, fear on the part of the president that Comey might not do something that the president didn't approve of. And he was wanting fear also on Comey's part and the investment then in a kind of blind obedience so that you'll be looked after by the president. And that takes no account of that takes no account of any adherence to principle or constitution or to any ethical guidelines, because the blind, obedient, loyal follower is supposed to simply obey and do what they are told. Whereas the commitment relationship based on a kind of more trusting relationship is one in which one is also allowed to confront, if necessary, in an assertive way, the leader when you feel that you're being asked to do something that may not be necessarily in line with what you're being told to do or in line with any ethical standard.
So, yeah, that brings me to that wonderful statement or question line. And I mean, I've heard this asked of people in job interviews. I've heard people talk about this, but I think this is just so valid in many of the things that we see. What do you do when unethical is behavior is actually an instruction from your boss?
Yes, and that happens. And I sometimes end up coaching people who are living in that kind of fear that they are just being told to do things that they know are not right, or may be on the edge of what is right and what is wrong, or something that they may not be quite sure about. Mm. And it may be the first time they go along with what they're being invited to do, but then the problems escalate, or they're being asked to do more and more things where they know they're being pushed across a line, in a sense, and then it becomes more difficult. So I think if you are living in fear of a situation of a leader who is giving you instructions like that, because you fear losing your job, you fear that other people have been fired for not obeying instructions, then many people go with it. They will do what they are told because they need the job. And the question for them then is, to what extent can they live with themselves if they do that? Because you've only got one set of ethics, and you can have many jobs, but you've only got one ethical sense. So I think the most critical thing is for people to firstly find the courage to actually say, this doesn't work for me.
Mm.
And I'm not actually prepared to carry out that particular instruction. And it needs courage and self-confidence and trust that actually it's going to work out better for you in the long run. So having support from a coach or someone who can help guide you through that kind of process is very useful. Mm. But you need the courage to be able to confront. Very often, if you are doing a good job in the organization and you are adding value, it may just shift the relationship, and it may mean that you survive and are more left alone.
Mm.
But that doesn't take away the fear when you are faced with the instruction.
You know, I hear what you're saying, and I've certainly encountered it as well. And part of the challenge that the person now who's being forced to comply with what is not ethical, part of the challenge that they need to face is that if this issue, can I rather say, when the issue finally surfaces, who's going to carry the can? Not the superior. You haven't got that instruction in writing. There's not going to be an audit trail. So I think that ultimate accountability could still land at your door. So an important issue for me is to say, well, what can you do to prevent it? And unfortunately, there's not a great deal. As I say, you know, trying to get an audit trail is a joke, not going to happen.
So you mean saying to your boss, put it in writing, is not the right way to handle this one?
Well, you can try, but I'm just guessing it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But one of the approaches that a little counterintuitive perhaps, that is, I believe, one of the most effective ways, is that to the extent that if I'm the employee, to the extent that I have visibly and really positioned myself as a champion of ethics, to the extent that I'm really widely known to always stand up for what's right, it is, I would argue, one of the most effective deterrents of someone saying, no, don't go and approach her, she won't do it. And it's not a foolproof mechanism, but as I say, to the extent that you are genuinely well associated with ethics, it is somewhat of a deterrent.
So what you're saying is you should be wearing your ethical badge on the outside of your jacket as opposed to inside and flashing it occasionally.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a very true statement. I think we often, let me call it, haul out the ethical card.
Yes.
At times, rather than wear it on our brow and say, look, you know, this is how I behave. And I think the risk often is, you know, if you say I'm an ethical person, now you open yourself up to people judging you on that statement all the time. So now you've got to be really careful how you act all the time.
Yes.
Because, you know, people are watching, you know, yes, versus the, well, I'll pull out the ethics card when it suits me, you know, like, oh, remember, I'm an ethical person, so I don't do these type of things.
Yes, I think that's very important, Richard. Yeah. And I think that
consistency.
Consistency, and also to not be someone who plays the victim in the workplace.
Hmm.
The victim is someone who will always have somebody else who tells them what to do, and hopes to be saved one day. Mm. The difficulty, obviously, is that if you are given one instruction and you obey it, that may be crossing the line, it doesn't change the pattern. Mm. The challenge is to change the pattern of behavior, not to be someone who plays the victim in the workplace, but to be someone who takes responsibility for their work, works in that kind of ethical way, is brave, because sometimes you have to be brave to stay out of the culture.
Mm.
I think there's another issue as well, which is in thinking about where the challenges arise increasingly in terms of thinking about ethics in the workplace and in our companies. And that is that we are in a situation increasingly in the corporate world, and it's not just in South Africa, obviously, where the demand for short-term profitability from particularly shareholders, or the perceived demand from shareholders, puts a huge amount of pressure onto CEOs and businesses. Mm. And they think that their role is simply to maximize very short-term shareholder profitability, which creates huge pressures on businesses. And then you get companies like the Bell Pottingers of the world, who see a nice lucrative contract, and this will keep shareholders happy for a while, and they step into it without another thought, possibly,
yes,
as to what the ethical implications could be down the road, because they are under pressure and under, in some ways, very unreasonable pressure to deliver those short-term returns.
But Mark, I agree with you absolutely that that is true. What I would argue that the ethical leaders are not doing nearly as loudly as they should is speaking to and building an understanding of the ethical value within the company. That where we can build a wonderfully ethical culture, does that have a value? Well, of course it does. But do we speak to it? We speak about financial capital. Do we speak about ethical capital? So I think, again, the CEOs, the MDs can be, I don't say they will necessarily significantly lessen those demand for short-term profits, but they can be speaking to it or saying, I appreciate these demands, but I want to speak to our choice in terms of preserving our ethical capital in this instance.
And that should also be a discussion with the shareholders. Because the difficulty we have is that the shareholders, if they don't, at the moment, if they don't see the short-term financial returns, they don't have any particular responsibility or concern necessarily for your business, because they'll go somewhere else.
But interestingly, so, you want to see an interesting shareholder meeting, an AGM, when there's ethical issues on the table.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think back to things like PPC and things like Ketso Gordon saying, you know, I disagree with, you know, other views around the table, so much so that I'm prepared to walk away.
Yes.
Now, I mean, that was a difference of opinions on various things, but the point should be the same. Is that CEO prepared to say, listen, you know, shareholders and blocks of shareholders, remember, you know, pension funds, PRC, etc., this is how we do things here. And if you don't like that, well then, sorry, I'm not your CEO.
Yes.
You know, and that's like taking the ultimate of, you know, you're being told by your boss to do something unethical. You know, if it's one thing if your boss tells you, what happens if the board effectively is telling you, or your shareholder block is telling you to do something or act? Maybe they're not giving you a direct instruction of, you know, do something unethical, but they basically say to you, look, it's an ethics isn't a, you know, isn't on the agenda, and you say ethics is on the agenda. How are you handling that as a CEO? I mean, we can take this conversation all the way to that level to say, listen, I as a CEO believe that this is critical for our business, and the shareholder block says, nah. Well, then, you know, you have to say to yourself as a CEO, well,
it takes courage.
Thanks, but I'm in on these conditions, and I'm out under those conditions.
But Richard, sure. Can I just pass a quick mischievous comment?
Always.
what happens when the major shareholder is the government? Mm. I mean, we won't pursue this, but I'm just saying. And if the instruction, suggestion, hint, whatever is coming from
now you've gone there, so let's go there. I mean, I've seen in the press the conversations about the SAA chair, okay,
yes,
and the questions and the statements that she's made about her tenure and all the rest, very, very, very concerning. But more concerning is comments about, well, you know, she was instrumental in pushing back on where the SA technical tenders were going, for example, with comments of it mustn't go here, it must go to there. And I'm going, why is the chairman of the board making phone calls to even have these conversations? This is not a chairman of the board conversation.
No.
This is not even a board conversation. This is a procurement strategy or a procurement process. Why are you even involved?
The involvement raises red flags of huge note.
Of huge note.
I think it's sometimes very easy, though, for us to think in terms of the ethical issues being those, you know, we really have to throw stones at government and the parastatals and so on.
I think it's everywhere.
And obviously it's everywhere. And if we think about many of our traditional industries in this country, and thinking of the mining sector particularly at the moment, it's very easy to see ethical issues as somewhat distant or a little bit remote, and to have some kind of plausible deniability, so to say we're not really involved, and whether something in the DRC is happening with child labor, it's not, you know, something has been signed to say that they don't use a lot of child labor, so we're kind of okay and we're covered. So the ethical questions creep up, and for a long time people can kind of live with some ambiguities, and that's where it starts, and that's where we have to really start raising questions.
So, Mark, that's for me very important from the perspective of, for a long time, we have been living with these ambiguities. But where we are in the world right now, we don't have that luxury anymore. Considering where we are politically, socioeconomically, and just purely pure economics. And it's not just in South Africa, it's globally. Things are changing, it's shifting, it's dynamic. There's a lot of pressure everywhere. How important is personal values for a CEO? And if you had to look at a panel of CEOs stepping up to take a really big job, what would you be looking at in that person when it comes to their value set and whether or not they would be able to uphold ethics?
Well, I think it's absolutely critical.
Be ethical.
Yes, I think the ethical question is absolutely critical. And one of the things that I think the leadership programs do recognize in the business schools is that you cannot be a copied leader. So we're not all going to be Nelson Mandela or Oliver Tambo or some of the great leaders that we have in this country. You can only be yourself as a leader, and you bring your own personality and your own ethical framework to your leadership style. And I can live with that. So I think the authentic leader is someone who has their own sense of values that they've inherited and developed over their lifetime, and their own history, which will also inform their development as a leader, because it's going through some of these hard times that really forms people as leaders. So I say to people, be yourself as a leader and bring what you wish to bring. And behind that, I also say, and you will have to make choices about what kind of leadership you want to be, because you can be a leader who lives through fear and commands fear and blind obedience if you choose to be so. And you may be very successful for a while, although someone at some stage is going to have it out for you, I think.
But Leandi, I think the question of values is imperative, and we're sometimes not linking those values quite as directly as we should to ethics. And for me, a couple of the non-negotiations, I've actually got four, a double couple, is that in terms of honesty, fairness, respect, and responsibility. If those were the only four we could choose, and that was present, I think you've got a foundation that indicates that the behavior is very likely
and
to
the courage to live them.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
You went through those very quickly, Cynthia. Let's repeat those again.
Honesty, fairness, respect, and responsibility.
Yeah, okay. I think those are four words that ring. And interestingly, you know, if you think of value statements and values that companies put up, you know, we often talk about trust, respect, accountability, you know, things like this. So, you know, the ethics theme is quite easy to connect with the rest of your value statement as an organization. This is not a stretch.
Until you are given an instruction.
Yes. Now, I just wanted to, for a moment, just flip this 90 degrees and have a quick conversation about something that I'm very aware of, having some personal exposure to this. You have countries in the world that have taken a very hard line on ethical issues. And I'm thinking here, particularly interesting enough, given your earlier comments, the United States.
Yes.
So they have the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, okay, which makes it a criminal offense for a director of a company to be engaged or have their environment engaged in foreign corrupt practices. And, you know, I have a client who is American-based, and so as a consequence of that, we have American, or the directors have American residency. And so I always joke with the staff, but I mean it when I say it. I say to them, you know, think about the fact that every time person X or Y goes back to the States, if you've done anything here in Africa and in the global, you know, in the wider African continent, not just South Africa, but all over Africa, if you've done anything that is inappropriate, that has been reported, because people know that we have an American holding company, and it's been reported to the authorities, you can look forward to putting X and Y in jail as they try and clear customs at JFK.
Yes.
And staff look at me in horror, and I go, yeah, it's the orange jumpsuit stuff we're talking here, people. And they kind of, you can see the wheels turning of, you know, suddenly ethics is now real.
Mm.
You know, the ethical behavior of I bribed the official to get the license or the tax clearance or the whatever I did, suddenly now is like, whoa, hold on a second. And you know, I look at this and I go, well, you know, incentive or stick, you know, carrot stick type of thing. I mean, I'm definitely, you know, Foreign Corrupt Practices Act is definitely in the stick category for me. But it is interesting to observe staff's reactions when I do this, particularly given that they know these directors quite well and they see these people quite regularly. You know, and I kind of go, would you be okay with Mr. X or Mrs. Y having some really harsh conversations at customs or at border control, and they're on a list that says that door over there is your door, not the glass exit? And you know, people say to me, like, oh, no, I wouldn't like that to happen to him or her. And, you know, it suddenly makes the ethical dilemma, you know, real close. And,
yes.
And what I found quite interesting is we have had scenarios where leadership locally has pulled the, you know, I'll tell somebody to do something less than correct. And then there's this little feedback loop that comes out to the global, let's call it the global leadership team outside of the country specific, that says, so-and-so asked me to do X, and I know that that's going to be orange jumpsuit stuff for person X, Y, or Z, or whatever they are. And so I'm not doing this, but I need you to know. It's like the little bit of a whistleblowing conversations.
Yes.
Because they're going, it doesn't maybe matter to them in country, but I know it's going to affect, you know, global leadership.
It's very important.
I think to myself, well, there's an interesting way of many, you know, so in that case, because of the layers of the organization, there is almost a check and balance in place.
But it's still to some extent based on a tick box approach.
Mm.
So people will tick the box, have you ever been involved in certain activities or whatever, and they'll tick no. Mm. But it is important to have these.
Well, for me, it becomes real when it's real-time reporting, which happens. I mean, embassies get informed that this and this behavior is happening in XYZ country.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, you know, especially when my experience is, especially when you've hacked off a local competitor, then they're real quick to talk to your holding company's country of origin for some reason.
Of course, we are very much in a global world these days, and whether those same standards apply to China, all the BRICS countries, is another question. And those economies are significant now in terms of driving economic development in Africa, for example. So I think one should encourage those kind of standards, and the more they can be applied globally, the better, obviously. But it's a challenging position if you're negotiating deals with Chinese in different countries in Africa to think about, well, where do the ethical standards apply here? How do they come in? And to what extent do the people I'm contracting with care about these kind of ethical standards is another question.
Yeah, it's my experience, particularly in the broader context of procurement and all this. And I mean, let's not even move into Africa. It happens here in our north of us. It's here in South Africa, part of Africa. I'm amazed at how people think South Africa is not part of Africa, by the way. It always amazes me. In the greater context of procurement and solutioning, I mean, the reality is every country on this continent is faced with this challenge. And by the way, please note that many of the real things that we've seen out in the press have been happening with companies that come from the developed first world.
Yes, of course.
You know, SAP.
Yes.
McKinsey's. KPMG, these are not companies that were born on the back end of a bulldozer here in Joburg.
Yes.
I mean, these are global concerns. Mm. You know, this is not something that's unique to us. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the first world has gone through its own fair share of issues. I mean, if I go back in the history, I mean, I remember vividly some of the issues that the Germans have experienced over the years in the procurement space. They've not been immune to this, and many other countries. So yeah, I think the ethical leadership question is a global one. It's not just our challenge,
sure,
but it's something that we have our own unique elements of
the
challenge.
There is evidence that ethical investments do produce strong returns and around the world. And it's something that I think we need to think about very much when we're exploring the culture of our investment culture and our corporate culture, is that ethical investments do well. And there have been investment funds that take an ethical approach, which do deliver strong returns. So I think there are signs of hope, and there are opportunities for people who care about these things to actually explore what would be a useful ethical approach if we are going to invest resources into a particular sector.
And Mark, what I think leads on from that very nicely is that I think one of the key roles that ethical leaders should be playing within their organizations, and that includes their external stakeholders, is to be really making a very clear business case for ethics.
Mm.
They shouldn't just assume this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, and I think we always talk about this, is does ethics matter? Absolutely. Is there value to ethics? Yes, there is. Okay. Is there value in, hashtag keeping or keep ethics alive? Absolutely. And you only have to look at the cost of not being in a great, in a good space, and you can see what the benefits are. Well, Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Mark Turpin, thank you very much. To Cynthia Schumann, thank you very much.
You're
Ethics
welcome.
Monitor, thank you very much. Henry, thank you very much.
Thank you very
Appreciate
much.
Your time. It's been great to talk about ethics, as always, on a monthly basis. Remember that hashtag keep ethics alive. Next up, the Youth Leadership Platform.
This is CliffCentral.com.